All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are breaking down Arthur Smith, Eric Bieniemy, Nathaniel Hackett, and Joe Brady as the four prime candidates to become the Atlanta Falcons' next head coach.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly on FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode, we are going to be going through the four prime candidates, allegedly, that are the front runners or back runners, whatever you want to call them, for the Falcons vacancy at head coach, now that it seems like their general manager in Terry Fontenot is all but locked up. It's not official yet, and we'll get into exactly why that is not the case on today's episode. And that will be sort of the bulk of what we're going to talk about on today's episode, talking about those four coaching candidates, as well as sort of what's the next steps in their general manager and head coaching search. So without further ado, let's sort of get into that as our Locked On Falcons lead story. So all the signs point to Terry Fontenot, the Saints assistant general manager, becoming the Falcons' next general manager, with a report from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport saying that he is currently the favorite. Nothing is official as of yet, and the Falcons can't hire him officially until after the playoffs are over for the Saints. However, you'll probably notice that another Falcons finalist in Brad Holmes was announced on Thursday as having gotten the Detroit Lions vacant GM spot. But according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and other sources, that's because the LA Rams, Holmes' current employer, gave the Lions permission to announce that move, and the Saints will not quite do the same for the Falcons until their season is over. So now we essentially wait. But it looks like Fontenot will be the Falcons' next general manager, the first black general manager in team history. And now, after Holmes becoming the third black general manager currently in the NFL, Fontenot will be the fourth. And then that leaves the question to who will be the Falcons' head coach, as that is the next hire on the docket. Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith is currently considered the front runner, according to various reports from NFL Network, ESPN, saying as much. He got a virtual interview from the Falcons this past Monday, then a face-to-face interview with owner Arthur Blank on Wednesday. Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator Joe Brady is another common name that you hear connected to the Falcons, likely due to his connection with Fontenot from their shared days in New Orleans, where Brady served as an offensive assistant in 2017 and 2018. Albert Breer of SI.com reported back in December that Fontenot had a good shot of earning the spot in Atlanta. And then he also, quote unquote, heard that he could be paired with current Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, making Hackett another candidate. And we've also heard various reports saying that Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy is still very much in the mix, both from The Athletic as well as the AJC, listing Bieniemy as the third finalist as opposed to Hackett. Should the Saints get eliminated from the postseason this weekend in their matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it's expected that Fontenot will be named the general manager shortly for the Falcons, and that will be the first domino that falls. And then it should only be a matter of time before that next domino falls and the Falcons find their next head coach. So, guys, there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, and we're going to continue today's episode by talking about the four candidates that we've talked about: Arthur Smith, Joe Brady, Eric Bieniemy, and Nathaniel Hackett. And these will mostly be sort of my initial takes, my initial impressions of these guys. Nothing too in-depth. We'll save more of that in-depth analysis for whoever eventually is the hire, or when that list is narrowed down even further in the coming days and or weeks. And I'll admit up front that, you know, we'll probably spend the most amount of time talking about Smith and Bieniemy, just because personally I don't have any inside information on this. But my personal opinion is that they are probably the two most likely candidates to land a job, just simply because, for no other reason than that, Arthur Blank historically in his hires has seemingly sided more with pedigree and experience, which to me says that Smith and Bieniemy are the two likelier choices over guys like Brady and Hackett. But of course, we will see. And as we see what's coming up further on today's Locked On Falcons, I do want to talk about some prime candidates, not necessarily prime candidates for the Falcons coaching vacancy, but some prime candidates that will help you eat healthier and lose weight in 2021. So we're talking about what Built Bar has to offer. Of course, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market. You know, people ask me, Aaron, what do you think about this coach or that candidate? I don't know much about coaches, but I do know that Built Bars are protein bars that taste just like a candy bar because they have 100% real chocolate in them. You know, my favorites are the peanut butter flavor, the coconut almond. I'm also now in love with the white chocolate coconut deluxe flavor. They also have flavors like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, cherry barcia, so much more. And Built Bars aren't just tasty, they're also healthy. They're low in sugar, low in calories, high in protein, high in fiber. I like using them as low calorie meal replacements for breakfast and lunch. You can use them to give yourself a energy boost pre or post workout, however you want. Just head over to builtbar.com, use the promo code Locked On to get 20% off your next order. That's promo code Locked On for 20% off your next order at builtbar.com. So 2020 is mercifully over, and it's time to get a fresh start with some fresh new wins. And that means if you're betting, you should be listening to the Locked On Bets podcast with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, football, and NBA picks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts. So let's talk about Arthur Smith. And you'll probably hear a lot of people being high on Arthur Smith. And I think a lot of that is related to the fact that he checks a lot of the boxes from a play calling standpoint that at least people like myself and others seem to want here in Atlanta, with sort of having a derivative of that Shanahan system that he learned under Matt LaFleur in Tennessee back in 2008. You know, and you know, one of the things that you like about Arthur Smith is using that pre-snap motion that was something that Dirk Koetter didn't use a lot in Atlanta this past year. You know, in terms of pre-snap motion, Arthur Smith in the Titans offense was the sixth highest usage in the NFL. And that gives that quarterback that sort of pre-snap information about whether it's man versus zone coverage and a lot of other potential matchup that they could take advantage of. You also had the highest usage of play action in the NFL in 2020, in large part due to Ryan Tannehill's performance and being the most productive play action passer in 2019 and being top three this past year in terms of yards per attempt. You also have a focus on that running game, which is the outside zone scheme and a high usage of that. I believe I saw somewhere that someone said, I don't know if it was 2019 or 2020, but you know, the Titans had more outside zone runs in one of those years than any other team in the league. So, you know, he's going to continue that sort of Shanahan derivative system, that Matt LaFleur system. Matt LaFleur ran that in 2018. And again, based off of the last two seasons of results, Arthur Smith has actually run that scheme better, or at least had a much more productive version of that scheme the last two seasons than even Matt LaFleur had in Tennessee. And, you know, one of the things you like about Arthur Smith is, you know, he had staying power in Tennessee. He was able to survive three different coaching changes, and all three of those coaches were like, look, I like what this guy brings to the table. And that says something about Arthur Smith, that all three of these coaches from different backgrounds, you know, all saw something in him. You know, he initially came on board in Tennessee back in 2011 when Mike Munchak was the head coach, and he was started off as a defensive quality control coach. So he's coached on both sides of the ball. Then he moved to the offensive side of the ball in 2012 as an offensive quality control coach. Then he was promoted to the assistant offensive line and tight ends coach in 2013 under Munchak. Then Munchak got fired. Ken Winsenhut came in 2014. And Smith became the assistant tight ends coach under our boy Mike Mularkey that year. Then Winsenhut got the X, and Mularkey was promoted to head coach in 2016. And then we saw Arthur Smith get promoted to the full-time tight end coach that year. And then, of course, Mike Vrabel came in 2018, retained Arthur Smith again, and then promoted him to offensive coordinator in 2019. The other interesting factoid about Arthur Smith is that his dad is the founder of FedEx. So I know my friend Charles McDonald thinks that's an important distinction. I don't know why I talked about that. Anyway, you know, I think one of the other things that you're going to hear if Arthur Smith winds up becoming named the head coach, I think you'll hear some criticism about maybe he didn't do a great job in this past weekend's playoff game against the Ravens and some of the play calling, particularly on that sort of fourth quarter drive with about 10 minutes left. The Titans were down 4 points, needed to drive down the field, and he, quote unquote, abandoned the run when the Titans were facing a second and two and a third and two. But I feel like that criticism is a little foolhardy. largely due to it's based off of the idea of you have Derrick Henry run the football type of stuff rather than actually looking at the game itself. And frankly, the Ravens had shut down the Titans running game all day long. Up to that point in time, the Titans had a rushing success rate of 22% overall. Derrick Henry had a rushing success rate of 25%. Derrick Henry, prior to that play, that second and two situation, had been successful on just one of nine runs prior to that. And, you know, that one successful run happened to be the first and 10 that set up, you know, where you got an 8-yard gain that set up the second and two, which I think, you know, recency bias is saying like, oh, Derrick Henry just ripped off an 8-yard run, run him again. Even though like the eight previous times they had ran the ball to Derrick Henry, as well as the, you know, counting 10 previous times, if you count runs to other running backs, they hadn't been able to really gain a significant amount of yards and were unsuccessful in those regards. So, you compare that to Ryan Tannehill's at least passing up that point. If you look at Ryan Tannehill's nine previous passes up to that, leading up to that second and two situation, he has a success rate of 67%. So you're looking at like that situation where Arthur Smith is going into that play thinking, look, our passing game has been three times more successful since the first quarter, right? The last time prior to that first and 10 run that Derrick Henry had had a successful run was in the first quarter with 4 minutes left to go. So you basically had like, what, 40 minutes of game time passed between a good run by Derrick Henry. So I feel like that criticism, if you're going to criticize what they did on that play, not necessarily they didn't run the ball, but I think the pass call that they called on second down was a relatively low percentage pass where they basically ran a two-man route and it was a fade ball to A.J. Brown on the outside that Tannehill overthrew. And, you know, generally you like A.J. Brown on a one-on-one versus cover one, you know, but he didn't win in that situation. I think maybe the Titans probably would have been better served if they were going to call that type of play is run some play action, you know, which they typically did, but they didn't do in that situation. Maybe you can suck up that safety or get that corner out of position or something like that. Then on the third and two play, you know, I think that was just quarterback error. Tannehill missed an open Cameron Batson on that particular play. The Ravens blitzed, and the guy that blitzed vacated that spot. Batson settled in, but Tannehill didn't look for him. And with his hot read, he basically threw to a double cover Jonnu Smith, and that play was broken up. So, you know, I sit here and I'll defend Arthur Smith's play calling, at least at the end of that Titans game. I won't sit here and say he's a perfect play caller by any means. I certainly think there's a lot of things that you can nitpick about his play calling. You can nitpick the lack of verticality in his offense, the tendency to rely a little bit too much on man beaters in terms of his wide receivers having to win one-on-ones like we talked about earlier with that A.J. Brown play. Maybe an over-reliance on running the ball on early downs, and one wonders, you know, that's not a problem when you have Derrick Henry running the ball, but if you don't have as good a running back, as good a running game as you have with Derrick Henry, and he had intended to see, is his offense as effective? And you can argue that because the Ravens were able to shut down the running game, we kind of saw what a Arthur Smith led offense would look like if, you know, their running game returns back down to earth against that Ravens team. And it wasn't that impressive. So I think there's certainly some criticism that you can level at Arthur Smith in that regard, but I wouldn't necessarily spend too much time worrying about, oh my God, he abandoned the run at the end of that Ravens game. So that's my thoughts on that. And we will continue today's episode and talk more about Eric Bieniemy as well as Nathaniel Hackett and Joe Brady coming up on today's podcast. But, you know, we're talking about coaching changes, and there's one place that you can go to get in on the action on who you think will be filling one of or all of the six current vacancies now that the Jacksonville Jaguars have named Urban Meyer as their head coach. And that one place is, of course, betonline.ag. It's the one place I trust. And you guys can sign up for a free account at betonline.ag, and you can use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. Just looking at the coaching odds for the Falcons, Arthur Smith is -150. So that makes Smith the favorite. Eric Bieniemy is +500. Joe Brady is +500, basically 5-1 odds. Todd Bowles is +700. Brandon Staley, who has an interview for the Falcons, is +700. Raheem Morris is +900. And there we have Nathaniel Hackett way down the board at +1,000 with 10-1 odds. So that's something that maybe you want to get in on the action. Maybe you want to take a flyer out on Nathaniel Hackett. And maybe after listening to today's episode, you might be more or less willing to place that bet. And of course, just head over to BetOnline.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So before we get into the conversation about Eric Bieniemy, you guys should be checking out the Locked On NFL podcast every Friday with your boy Q and Bo Brock as they bring on a betting expert and analyst from the Action Network. You can get your full weekend preview as well just by subscribing to the Locked On NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So let's talk about Eric Bieniemy. And, you know, we've had the various reports saying, you know, with Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle saying that Eric Bieniemy did not interview well. And then shortly thereafter, you had folks like Steve Wyche and Jim Trotter and even D-Led saying the opposite of that. You know, it's not the first time I've heard people say that Eric Bieniemy hasn't been a great interview. And that's been a contributing factor to why someone who is as quote unquote overqualified as he is hasn't necessarily gotten a gig yet. We'll see about that. There's also a report I've seen in the last couple of days saying that Eric Bieniemy is willing to stay put in Kansas City for another year and wait for the quote unquote perfect opportunity for him, which typically is code for no one is quite chomping at the bit to hire me. And so therefore, you know, I'm not breaking up. You're not breaking up with me. I'm breaking up with you. That sort of scenario. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, I think you can certainly make the case that Eric Bieniemy's chances of landing a gig aren't helped by the fact that Kansas City is so good and expected to be the Super Bowl favorite, although, you know, I'm not as convinced of that as others seem to be. But we've also seen teams have no qualms, including the Falcons, waiting until after the Super Bowl to hire their coach, which the Falcons did with Dan Quinn once upon a time. So with Bieniemy, sort of my thoughts on him are this. I feel like a lot is made, or too much is made, in my opinion, of what he does as a play caller, as well as Mahomes' development under his watch. You know, I think that stuff is overblown. You know, you talk about the Andy Reid coaching tree stuff. You know, Brad Childress, Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, the offensive coaches have not had a ton of success as head coaches, or let's say mixed success. Obviously, Doug Peterson certainly stands out from the bunch as far as their success, those three guys as play callers as well. You know, when you look at the defensive coaches or the, you know, John Harbaugh, in the case of John Harbaugh, special teams coaches under Andy Reid's watch, they have gone on to be a lot more successful in that regard. But, you know, I think really it's not about the play calling. It's not about any of that stuff with Eric Bieniemy. I think really the reason why, if you're, you know, pounding the table for Eric Bieniemy, I think the case for him is that he is a quote unquote leader of men and that he's sort of this detail oriented guy. And we have a tendency to focus probably a little too much on the X's and O's and the Falcons' failures in that regard under Dan Quinn, under Dirk Cutter, under Sark, et cetera, these past couple of years, I think in large part due to the fact that we got a glimpse of how valuable having quote unquote superiority in terms of play calling and X's and O's can be in that year under Shanahan. But I think you can certainly make the case that, you know, a big part of the Falcons' downfall went beyond just the X's and O's. And, you know, the quickest way I can summarize it is that basically what the Falcons should have been these last couple of years, and part of the reason why I was predicting them to be this 9 or 10 win team going into 2018, going into 2019, was the expectation that they would be this well-coached team that didn't have necessarily the mental errors, wouldn't fall apart when the injuries hit, wouldn't choke at the end of games, those sorts of things. Seemingly common things that you would expect out of a well-coached football team, not doing those things is what I mean. But, you know, and maybe you would have looked at those teams due to the lack of inspiring play calling, and you would have said, look, this team is not a Super Bowl team, as I often said back then, where, like, I was skeptical of their quote unquote Super Bowl ceiling, their ability to redeem that Super Bowl loss in those years. But certainly a team that I expected and thought should be more than capable of making the postseason and challenging teams in the first and second round teams. Maybe their ceiling is a second round team, and, you know, they would face a quote unquote real Super Bowl contender in that second round of the playoffs and get exposed. And similar to how I think a lot of people perceive teams like the Browns or the Colts or the Titans entering this offseason, this postseason, or similar to what you would argue the Mike Smith teams were early on in his tenure until a guy named Julio Jones showed up and started single-handedly carrying the offense in the postseason. So I think in a nutshell, the idea behind Bieniemy is that he's going to be able to fix some of that stuff due to his focus on details. He's going to give you that well-coached team. I think the play-calling stuff probably will wind up being whatever. He'll probably be like a Matt Nagy 2.0 as a play caller. And if that's the case, then we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. You know, and I don't mean that in the case that I think Matt Nagy's a bad play caller. He just hasn't necessarily overwhelmed me with his ability. You could certainly make the case that maybe he's held back by his quarterback. I'm just saying, like, you know, Bieniemy's body of work, whether we're talking about Kansas City or Colorado, doesn't necessarily scream that he's going to be a superstar play caller in that regard. But maybe you could make the case that with a quality quarterback like a Matt Ryan or potentially another quarterback, that he could certainly outperform those expectations. But I think ultimately, if you're trying to sell your friends on why Eric Bieniemy would be a great hire, you know, it's not because he's going to borrow Andy Reid's playbook or because he took, you know, Patrick Mahomes from this raw, you know, wild sort of draft prospect into a league MVP. I would certainly pump your brakes on selling that point. But if you're selling Bieniemy on the fact that, you know, under his tutelage, you're going to be able to eliminate the fourth quarter collapses, you know, lack of toughness, whether we're talking about mental toughness or physical toughness, is going to go away. You know, the inability for when the injuries do hit, the ability to respond to adversity, you know, you can have that next man up mentality sort of, because those guys will be well prepared to step into the roles, you know. And when I think of this, I automatically think of Duke Riley sort of being forced to step into a prominent role in 2018 and utterly falling on his face in that season. And, you know, the general lack of development that we've seen across the Falcons roster over the last 6 years at several key positions, at several prominent players, you know, those things will end under Eric Bieniemy. And I think that's a legit sales pitch for Eric Bieniemy in my eyes. So let's move on to Nathaniel Hackett. And I think it's a very similar sales pitch under Nathaniel Hackett, because you're not necessarily selling people on his play calling prowess. I think you're selling him more on sort of being more of what we're talking about with Eric Bieniemy, being the more of that culture guy. Because when you hear some of the glowing things that people like Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers are saying about him, as well as others like Devontae Adams saying about him and what he's contributed to Green Bay these last two seasons, especially this year where he's gotten a lot of credit for their red zone success due to maybe putting a little bit more emphasis on that during the game plan. And he's not play calling in Green Bay. That's Matt LaFleur's job, the head coach, but he is helping with the game plans. And it seems like, from what I've read, he seems to focus a lot on the red zone stuff. And sort of has helped Aaron Rodgers buy more into that Matt LaFleur system. As we know, that relationship wasn't off to the best of terms when LaFleur got that job a year ago. So, you know, obviously Hackett does have experience as a play caller, dating from his 3 years as the Jaguars, or really 2 years as the Jaguars, two full seasons as the Jaguars offensive coordinator from 2017 and 2018, and 2 years as the Bills offensive coordinator in 2013 and 2014. You know, I certainly think it's fair to knock those offenses, you know, outside of the 2017 Jaguars AFC championship team. You know, that was, and that offense was heavily reliant on Leonard Fournette, and Austin often did their best to hide the fact that Blake Bortles was their quarterback. You know, in Buffalo, those were the EJ Manuel years. They also had Kyle Orton in that final year, in that second year, when they wound up benching EJ Manuel like a month into that, his second season as a starter. But primarily those offense, particularly in 2013, was primarily driven by, you know, the Fred Jackson, CJ Spiller, in that running game, and having a dominant running game. So it seems like his offenses, when they've been good, have been very good rushing teams. So, you know, I think the one thing you'll note about Nathaniel Hackett, in contrast to, say, an Arthur Smith or an Eric Bieniemy, is that his offenses haven't been that reliant on play action, at least when he's been calling plays. You wonder sort of what the LaFleur influence would be, you know, because that's a big part of the LaFleur offense in Green Bay. So maybe he can incorporate more play action in that regard. The other thing of note for Nathaniel Hackett is his bloodlines. His dad is Paul Hackett. He was one of sort of the OGs, you might say, of sort of the West Coast offense, having been Joe Montana's quarterback coach in San Francisco under Bill Walsh in the 80s, then going on to be, you know, the driving force that got the Chiefs to acquire Joe Montana in the early 90s when he was there as well. So let's sort of wrap things up with Joe Brady. And, you know, you're going to probably hear a lot of Sean McVay comps. I think those are easy comparisons for people to make. I think they're kind of lazy, though, you know, without going too deeply into it. I feel like Sean McVay is kind of a coaching prodigy. And, you know, people often forget that Sean McVay spent 8 years, 9 years, if you count his 1 year in the United Football League, coaching professional football before he got to LA. And Brady basically has 2 years plus this past year in Carolina. Other than that, it basically being college, and famously was at LSU, and, you know, getting the bulk of the credit for that historic offense that we saw with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase a year ago in that national championship team. And I thought he did some good things this past year in Carolina, but nothing that really blew me away. You know, maybe you can blame it on average quarterback play. Maybe you can blame that on middling offensive line play or the injury to Christian McCaffrey, whatever. But, you know, I think if the expectations were that he was going to take this league by storm in a major way in 2020, he did not live up to that hype. And I think if you're going to target Joe Brady, I think you're hoping, you're betting on the upside, you're betting on the potential that, and that hype that we're talking about is still there, but maybe it's going to take you know, a couple of years to fully unlock that as he gets a little bit more accustomed to the NFL game. And you can compare that in some ways to someone like Steve Sarkisian, who, you know, had that very first lackluster year in the NFL. And we saw him continue to grow in 2018 and then going back to the collegiate level and continue to build upon that in 2019 and 2020. This past year with Alabama to be a national championship team. And now he's going to take over Texas and we'll see if he can, you know, turn that program around. So I think, again, if you're hiring Brady, you know, you're betting on the quote unquote latent it factor that he's going to have. And it, maybe it's going to take some time to unlock that. I think, however, for me, I know I'm certainly concerned about the lack of experience with Joe Brady. And because I don't think he's going to necessarily be this McVay level genius, I think it's even more important on who he winds up hiring as his coaching staff that will be able to determine his success. You know, I thought McVay kind of landed a coup when he was able to get Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator initially in LA. And, you know, even though Matt LaFleur was his initial offensive coordinator there, although we know McVay was calling the plays, I thought it was another coup for McVay to get Greg Olsen as his quarterback coach. Greg Olsen's currently the Raiders offensive coordinator, but prior to going to LA and ultimately Oakland and now Vegas, Greg Olsen, you know, had a basically a decade's worth of play calling experience to sort of contribute into that conversation with Sean McVay. So I feel like, you know, Brady is going to have to surround himself, whether he lands a gig here in Atlanta or somewhere else, at some key spots with, you know, a bunch of people on his coaching staff that have a lot of NFL experience to make up for his lack of NFL experience. And I think, again, you're comparing, you know, 3 years of NFL experience under Joe Brady with nine-ish years for Sean McVay. And so you need to have even more guys. You know, Wade Phillips had like, what, 40 years of NFL experience at that point in time, or 30 plus at that point in time. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I think with Joe Brady, that's what you're hoping to see from him rather than sort of betting on this notion of him being this sort of McVay-level genius. So, you know, now that you guys heard all that, those are my thoughts on the four coaches. Again, you know, if I was betting on this, I would probably bet on, you know, Arthur Smith and Eric Bieniemy being the job. You know, I actually maybe have put some money on Eric Bieniemy today before I recorded this episode, just because I like the odds, plus 500, 5-1, you know, there's still a little cash that way, even though the favorite, overwhelming favorite seems to be Arthur Smith. You know, in the case that, you know, we get some news that the Falcons are dragging their feet in part due to the fact that, you know, they may be waiting for Eric Bieniemy. You know, I'll get a little money, you know, come February, you know, on my side. So, you know, that'll go towards some chicken wings or something like that. But, you know, you guys, of course, can get on the action at betonline.ag. Use that promo code Locked On. But, you know, I think it'll be interesting to sort of see how it goes. And obviously, you know, it seems like we know who the general manager is going to be. It's just not official yet. And we'll see if the Bucks take care of business this weekend against the Saints, and then we'll probably get an announcement Monday or Tuesday from the Falcons telling us, you know, who the general manager is, and then we'll probably have another round of, that's my guess, is that, you know, we're going to see probably maybe some more interviews next week with Fontenot in. I don't know how this process is going to go. I don't recall how it went the last time. So, you know, I imagine Fontenot is going to have to meet with some of these candidates. Obviously, he knows Joe Brady. You know, maybe he knows Nathaniel Hackett through Doug Marrone, because Doug Marrone was in New Orleans as well. So maybe that's one of the reasons why someone like an Albert Breer is making that dot connection or whatever between Fontenot and Hackett. Who knows at this point in time? So we'll see how that goes. Ultimately, it's going to be Arthur Blank's choice. But that's what I wanted to say, guys. And we will be back on Monday and probably answer some questions, as well as potentially talk about any official hires that we may have in news over the weekend. So that's what we'll get into on the next Locked On Falcons. If you have any feedback that you want to provide to me that we can answer on a Monday mailbag episode, you can send that in via Twitter to Locked On Falcons, via Facebook to Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it, guys. Until then.